Welcome to another edition of the Superflay Podcast, your Bing Crosby and NBA podcast. Don't ask. I don't know. It is Wednesday, November 23rd, 2016, and I'm your host, as always, Joe Borelli, coming at you from my studio in Brooklyn. Yeah, that's my best radio voice. How you like it? Anyway, happy Thanksgiving, y'all. Welcome to Thanksgiving week. It's been a pretty uneventful week for me. I've been off on vacation for the most part, and still I find that I have no time to get this stupid podcast done. But I hope you're listening, and I hope you're enjoying, and I hope you guys all have great, wonderful things planned for the upcoming holiday, or the holiday tomorrow. I thought I would do this for you today, so you have something to escape the family with tomorrow, when you're trying not to talk about politics and religion and all things nice. But let me think. I want to tell you, in the spirit of Thanksgiving, and in the spirit of trying to remain positive and stay upbeat, I want to talk about a few things that I'm thankful for. First and foremost, I am thankful for you guys. As many of you that listen in as many countries as you are, and as much feedback and positive things you've said and given, I thank you so much. I wouldn't be doing this without you guys. You know, this is a free podcast. I do it for free, and you listen for free, and the only way we can keep going is if you give me the motivation to succeed and keep going. And you do. So I thank you for that. So thank you, guys and gals. Yeah, I hope you enjoy this as much as I enjoy doing it. I'm sorry if the quality is not always up to snuff, or the quantity of podcasts are not always there, but I do my best. I do, you know, like most people I think that do podcasts, I have a full-time job. I'm not sponsored here, and so this is just, again, a labor of love. So, to all you out there in the podcast land, thanks for being with me for these last couple months. And feel free to tweet at me, and I'll tweet at you. And if you want to get in touch with the show, you know what? Hold on. Let me think. There's other things that I want to be thankful for. What am I thankful for? Number two on the list. I'm thankful to have a wonderful wife who's in the other room cooking dinner right now for just the two of us for Thanksgiving, because we've already gone to see her family in Rhode Island, and now we're just going to spend time at home in Brooklyn together eating turkey and stuffing, which I'm going to make. I'm going to make the stuffing. She's going to make the turkey. I'm thankful for glasses of whiskey that I have sitting in front of me. Just one. I'm only, you know, it's just a nightcap maybe, or a pre-evening cap, whatever. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that we have a wonderful mayor of New York who's doing wonderful things for people. I'm thankful for outreach programs for people in that do homeless shelter things for Thanksgiving for people in New York and Philadelphia. I've donated to a soup kitchen, I guess, in Philly, because I always feel like it goes further in my hometown, or just because I feel like New York has such an abundance of caregivers here naturally that want to take care of each other and donate to do good things. And I encourage everyone to do that. But I also feel like I feel like it goes a little bit further in Philadelphia. And I'm not around to witness it, but I did donate a little bit of money to a soup kitchen. And I advise, or not advise, but I hope that you guys have a good Thanksgiving and feel, you know, like you'd like to share the wealth, or, you know, help people succeed in their everyday lives by donating to whatever charity or whatever you feel is, you know, reasonable and good. You don't have to, of course. I mean, obviously, you can just do what you do. But one more thing I'm thankful for is my next guest, Damon Rangula, who you guys heard a couple weeks ago, probably a month ago, right before the season started. We talked about the Lakers, and he's back to talk about big men around the NBA and about the Lakers' hot start again. So if you want to reach out and get in touch with the show, you can do it by tweeting me at SuperflightPod, or tweeting me personally at Joe Borelli. You can email the show at thesuperflightpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, and everything else that you listen to it on. Please review and rate the show and leave comments and all that good stuff so that other people can find the show. So happy Thanksgiving, guys, and I'll be right back.
Hello?
Hello there, my friend. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Can you see me?
I cannot.
That's weird.
I just see your initials.
Oh, weird. Let me see if I can get to this thing. Hold on. Can you see me now?
Nope.
All right, well, I guess it's just audio then, huh?
No problem. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Do I sound okay?
Yeah, you sound fine. We're recording, just so
Okay.
you know. So I can cut all of this out if we want to, or we could just let it roll.
No. So I just wanted to apologize to your listeners. I left my mic at home, so I'm just using the standard headphone thing that comes with my phone. So if the audio quality is a little bit lower, it's not Joe's fault, it's mine.
That's right. Blame yourself.
Yeah,
It's really weird that you can't see me. That's unfortunate. But I can see you, so I have you at a
great.
disadvantage. You're looking good, my friend. You're looking fine.
Thank you. I assume you are as well.
Yeah, well, I always do, I guess, right? So, you want to talk some NBA?
Oh, nothing more.
All right, cool. Before we get started, let's do the rundown. Tell people where they can find you and how to get in touch, etc.
Easiest way, Twitter at DAMANR. I usually, if I write anything, I tweet it out there. I most likely am writing for Silver Screen and Roll. I've scaled down a little bit of writing on my own website, falsehypothesis.com. So, just in general, if you follow me on Twitter, I healthily plug my stuff.
Good deal. Okay, cool. So we were chatting back and forth, I guess, via Twitter and email. And
Yes.
I asked you if you wanted to go run the league a little bit, and then I suddenly got stuck on like this whole big men trend that's been happening with big guys shooting the 3-point shot. And so I figured let's talk about that for a bit.
I think it's so fascinating. In the way it's happened, I always thought it was going to be a little bit gradual, but it feels like it's just there's this green light that's been given to key guys, and they're taking full advantage of it.
Oh, for sure. So wait, are you saying that you saw this coming? You thought the big men would start shooting the three?
No, I thought that there would be specialists, guys who kind of came into the league where we assumed, okay, these guys have 3-point range. Like I think, somebody like Karl-Anthony Towns, they were talking about that
Right.
coming up to the draft, but I didn't anticipate the kinds of players that have incorporated it and are shooting it regularly.
Yeah. So we were talking about, for instance, Marc Gasol and Brook Lopez are, I guess, the two big names that stand out right now because these are guys who are traditionally back to the basket sort of low post players. And all of a sudden, this year, like you said, they've been given the green light and they're shooting threes. And not only are they shooting them, they're hitting them, which is unbelievable to me. I mean, Brook Lopez, it didn't seem like that big of a transition because we knew he could step out and hit from like 20 feet away, but going to the 3-point line, it's kind of incredible. Like he's not missing a beat. And I guess
And
Gasol had a nice jump shot too. But yeah, just you don't think of these guys as that type of player. Go ahead.
for as flat-footed as Marc Gasol is, he can do everything, like everything. And coming into the draft, he was part of that infamous Lakers deal for Pau Gasol, and he was a throw-in. And look at him now. I mean, he literally, there's nothing on the basketball court that I don't think he can do. And it's so fascinating. And he's like you're saying, it's not that, we saw some big men take 3-point shots in desperation, right? It's like 2 seconds left
Right.
and the shot clock's running down and a center's open, so he'll knock him down occasionally. This is like a part of their offense.
Yeah. And it's, stretching the floor for them in a way where, especially for the Grizzlies, they've never really had this. Their Achilles heel has always been shooting. They've had no shooters on the floor, And if you're able to spread the floor with your center, that's huge for them. And it looks like it's really working out really well in their favor.
It just opens up so much. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. If you can have your big man trailing on a fast break and then just hitting a wide open three from there, it's insane. I mean, it's obviously the way the league is going. With Steph Curry and the Splash Brothers knocking down so many threes and the way the league has gone towards trending towards threes, because as everyone knows, that 3-point shot is worth more than two. And even if you make them at half the rate, you're still making off, you're making out better by shooting the threes.
It's just the threat. It's the fact that it's a threat that, you know, you have to think about it. It changes everything in that, I guess one of the more famous shots this season has been Marc Gasol's shot to beat the Clippers. And, you know, DeAndre Jordan said, look, I shouldn't have helped. I should have stayed with Marc Gasol in the corner. But you're asking your center now to be thinking about protecting the rim. Also now he's thinking about guarding his own man, not off a switch, his actual man who's standing in the corner. How do you handle that? And I don't blame DeAndre Jordan for, you know, sagging off Marc Gasol, and Marc Gasol made him pay. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it really speaks to the need for two-way players at the post position now. Like, guys like Nerlens Noel, even though he can't hit a shot to save his life, becomes really valuable on the defensive end where he can cover everyone on the floor. And having him be able to, you know, his athleticism and being able to step out and cover guys on the perimeter, that becomes hugely, hugely important for you now. Like Karl Anthony Towns, for instance. Like, basically, he's a small forward in a center's body. Like, he's an anomaly.
He is unbelievable.
Incredible.
I think the key is, and it's not just that these guys are shooting threes, because Andrea Bargnani could hit threes as a big man, right? It's not just that. It's the fact that these guys can also create off the dribble. And I think that's the next level. That is what kind of this big man shooting threes. It's the fact that they are a threat off the dribble. They can also score inside. They can also do this, because if they're just a three-point shooting kind of center, that also is not going to get you that far. That's a nice to have.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes them a true weapon is the fact that, you know, I'm going back to Marc Gasol or Brooke Lopez. If those guys get you off the dribble and post you up, you're also toast. So you have to respect everything. If you just let Marc Gasol shoot threes all the time and he doesn't challenge you anywhere else, he actually is not. It's nice that he is a three-point shot, but he's not that next-level weapon that he's become, because he can do anything inside too. He has range from three-point all the way to the basket.
And don't forget that he's an incredible defender too. So like your center is really becoming... And this is what I was thinking about, you know, talking about the resurgence of the center, the NBA center. But these guys are resurging, sort of, they're bringing life back to this position in a way that's never been done before. They're complete, complete players. They're able to hit everywhere on the floor. They can work with the ball in their hands, and they defend the rim. And it's just an incredible thing to watch, which is nice, because like it's for the last several years has been a point guard league. But now you're seeing guys that are like this size doing essentially the same things as a point guard. A lot of them can really pass out of, you know, they can pass as well.
It goes in waves, right? It goes in cycles. And it's fascinating when we, you know, when we start talking about the death of the center. Well, the center is just as important as they have been. It took, there was a transition. But you look at a decision like when the NBA removed the center designation from All-Star rosters. Now that looks a little off.
A little silly.
And it's because, And I think it's just overreacting to a trend in the short term. It rarely works out, because you look at it when the Warriors put their team together, and even going back when the Heat put their team together, everybody started freaking out like, oh, we need to change the CBA. We need to do this. We need to do that. We cannot overreact to any kind of present kind of, you know, shift. And I think, for centers now, they're reminding us like, hey, it's still beneficial to be 7 feet tall or 6'11". And the fact that they've adjusted to the modern game, it took them a little while because it's a completely new skill set.
Right.
But now you have this next generation of centers who can do it all. And now they're all of a sudden, now we have too many point guards. So there's a gluttony of point guards. Now, again, the most valuable player is that playmaking kind of scoring center again.
Yeah. It's funny when you talk about overreacting, like, doing things in an overreactive way, like, we should never have a knee-jerk reaction, especially the NBA. Like, they should be more even-keeled about these sort of things. But, it was a reaction to the fact that, like, centers had sort of gone out, and it was just a guard-dominant league. I mean, it's, you know, you can see examples of, like, knee-jerk reactions going bad all over the place. For instance, people reacting to somebody's emails and electing a moron for president. But anyway... This is neither here nor there. let's talk about, I got to get my digs in where I can, man.
Nah, I don't blame you.
Let's stay away from politics. So, you know, there's some other big guys in it. Like, let's talk about the unicorn, Porzingis. I mean, he's not a center. He's more of a power forward, but he should be a center. Right.
Yeah.
He stretches the floor. He really works well with the ball in his hands. He can pass and he can defend and he blocks the shit out of people's shots.
Yeah.
I think the
exciting thing about somebody like Porzingis is he came in the league with that.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. He's Well, the same thing with Karl Anthony Towns. He also came in the league. You know who else came in the league as a 3-point shooter and is actually as of right now, I think, leading the league in three point completion? Joel Embiid.
Oh man. It has been so much fun to watch Embiid. It has been amazing.
Thank you, friend. Thank you.
it's one of those things where you just saw him the first game and you're like, oh my God, what is this? This is so amazing. His personality, it's like we've only, unfortunately due to his injuries, we've only been able to kind of absorb his personality through Twitter and all this. And he's hilarious. But that energy, he's just on another playing field. It really shows itself on the court. I'm forgetting the term, but it's like
to his own beat of a different drummer or something like that. Yeah,
exactly. And you see that on the court. He's all the rules about playing that position, all the rules about how he should play, all out the window with this guy. He just has a feel for it. And what's scary is he's only played basketball for like a really short amount of time relative to other players at this stage.
And hasn't played in the last 2 years.
Right. Yeah. The amount of rust that I was expecting, for him to play 10, 15 minutes a game for like, you know, 60 games and just be kind of all over the place showing glimpses. But no, game one, this guy was ready to go.
And you know what really impressed me about him too was like, I'm totally on board with everything you're saying. I'm totally so blown away by his court presence, his ability to pick things up so quickly. He's better than I expected. But the thing that really stood out to me, from day one, he was holding his own guys accountable. Like when they were not rotating, he's got the ball in his hands and nobody's moving. They're just watching him with the ball and not doing a single thing to help out off the ball. And he, you know, like he was fouled or turned the ball over and he immediately went to his guys and like lit them up verbally. He's like, what are you doing? You have to help me out. He's holding everyone accountable. That's like a maturity for a 22-year-old that's playing. He's only played 9 games now in the NBA. That is incredible. He really is. He's like Hakeem with a 3-point shot.
Right.
It's insane. And
it's kind of what you mentioned. I've been kicking around an idea where I've kind of want to advocate for a redshirt program for professionals, because what Embiid was able to do with stepping away from the game and not being able to play. Well, what do? You sit in practices or you watch film and you're just absorbing the game, stepped away from it. When you're a young player and come right into it, I don't know how much time or how much, there's just so much being thrown at you, where it takes, you know, a half a season or a full season for the game to slow down until you can start seeing the big picture. Well, what has Embiid been doing? This is all he's been able to do.
Yeah, for the last 2 years, he's been sitting on the bench and just absorbing, which is sort of good. But you could also make the case that, like, that's why you want guys to stay in college a little bit longer. You know, give them another year. They learn much.
The problem is the college game is just going further and further and further away from where the NBA is going. And that's where the potential of a D-League becoming a real competitor to college is very interesting, because the D-League is more of a professional system. You're in the NBA system then, and that becomes interesting. I'm very biased against college basketball. I really can't watch it. And when I was younger, I was able to watch it. It's just too far now. It's a different sport to me. I would rather watch, you know, I name two bad teams, the Orlando Magic and the Nets, right. I'd rather watch that than, you know, and this is extreme, but like a Sweet 16 matchup.
Really? Even more than the Sweet 16 is the only, I get involved with March Madness, but that's about it. And I agree. The game is,
I watch the you know, opening 2 days where the craziness happens, and I watch the championship game. That's it.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I feel something like something is so disingenuous about that whole sports and college thing. It kind of makes me angry, and let's not get into that. But well, anyway, we were talking about like, so this, I think this is not just a trend. I think this is going to be the new norm. You know, I think that, like, as we saw, Porzingis and Joel Embiid coming in and Karl Anthony Towns coming into the league, being able to defend and dribble and pass and shoot from everywhere on the court. I think this is going to become the new norm. I think scouts and coaches are looking for this exact thing. And at this point, you have three really young guys who are just coming into the league, and they're going to be doing this. Hopefully they all stay healthy and for years to come. So for the next decade, you're going to see, I think, the ability to be able to stretch the floor as a 7-foot player becomes so, so important. What are your thoughts?
I completely agree. I think, you know, a big part of this is when you're a young player and you're, you know, in junior high or something like that, what are you doing? You're emulating your idols, right? And I think a whole generation of people, of kids grew up, you know, maybe early on watching Kareem, so they were a post-heavy player. But then you started watching Michael Jordan, and you started watching guys like him. And now if you're growing up, you're watching LeBron James, and you're watching, you know,
Steph Curry,
right? So I think you start emulating them, and at a young age, you know, and like Anthony Davis started off as a point guard. So that's why he has those skills.
Right.
And I think, so there's obviously, you know, like we talked about the trend, it could go back at some point, but right now, at least for the foreseeable future, completely agree. It's going to be, you know, developing ball handling skills. Right. Why would a 7-footer need ball handling skills? Well, because like I mentioned, you need, with the 3-point shot, you also need the threat of beating somebody off the dribble. You become more of a complete player, and all of a sudden, like we've been saying, the center is back to being one of the most important positions again.
And I love it. You know, and to go to your point too about the D League, I think with the new CBA coming up, they're going to make the D League really much more important. And I've been talking about this for years. Why aren't they using the D League as like a farm system, you know, instead of college? A lot of guys don't. But I don't know if you saw the Ben Simmons documentary. I haven't because I don't get Showtime, but
I've not seen it yet.
I've heard that, you know, like he talks trash about being in college. Like he didn't want to go. He didn't give a shit about going to college. And that's like, you know, I am totally a proponent of kids going to college, but for the sake of education, not necessarily for the sake of a sports scholarship. But anyway,
listen, they can go back.
Yeah, that's true. And they can always go back.
That's what I don't understand, where it's like a prime of a professional career. I'm sure, like physically speaking, They can play in the leagues. They can, obviously it takes time to develop and all that.
Mm-hmm.
They only have 10 years, or, you know, you're a freak, 15 years.
Right.
And then after that, they can go to college. They can get 3 PhDs if they want. Like they have all the time in the world at that point. Nobody's stopping them.
And they're much more mature. They'll be able to bring a more well-rounded mind to their, you know, their studies. We're getting off this path really quicker. But so my question is to you, who else would you like to see in the NBA develop a 3-point shot? What other big men would you like to see have a consistent 3-point game?
I have one big one because let's see if it lines up with mine.
Go ahead. I want to hear it.
I think if Blake Griffin got a 3-point shot, if you look at how good the Clippers are right now, they have an artificial ceiling, because at the end of games, when you're in the playoffs, you're in a playoff series, and if you really want to be a championship contender, it should not be as easy as it is to guard that team, because that team has – Blake Griffin is a top, you know, whatever talent.
Yeah.
Chris Paul is a top whatever. You know, they're so good. Yet, in end-of-game situations, down the stretch against a good team – they're going to force Blake Griffin to shoot that shot, or they're going to take DeAndre Jordan out because of his free throw troubles.
Right.
And if Blake Griffin had a 3-point shot, or even if it was consistent enough from like 20 feet or whatever, like from inside, that team beats the Warriors. They can beat the Warriors. They beat the Warriors.
You think so?
And that's a huge, absolutely. Because I'm talking about this year, because they've had the longevity. Why are they coming out of the gate so hot? Because they're one of the teams,
right,
familiarity, and they are playing better, right? They are playing
for
better.
Sure.
If you have, I've watched so many Clippers games being in LA, And I see it, and there are teams, and we're going to talk about a team later where I look at ceilings of teams, and I'm like, okay, you've built a great team. What is the ceiling of this team? You never want and you never want your ceiling to be artificially limited. And I think Blake's inability to shoot even a consistent mid-range jumper is still in question. And if you stretch that out to the three-point line, now you have a real weapon. Now there's no question about if DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin can play together, because if we have another thing where it's second round or if they make the conference finals this year, you can't be that easy to guard when it comes down to it. You just can't. And when Blake got hurt last year, the Clippers were better on offense because their space opened up. They had to stretch the court.
Well, and I have to, you know, I was with you there. You know, Blake Griffin was definitely on the top of my list. He was one of them. I was like, man, if he can hit the three, but not consistently.
No.
And
it has to be a threat, like a real threat.
Right. And if, you know, the thing is, if DeAndre Jordan could shoot at all and you could step him away from the rim a little bit, it would help. But he can't. So he's a one-dimensional offensive player. I mean, he dunks a lob like nobody's business, and he's really good on defense. But yeah, you need that guy. If Blake Griffin could add a consistent three-point game, that would be incredible. They would be nearly unstoppable. Also, for me, Anthony Davis, surprisingly enough, only shoots 23% from three. That guy can hit from almost everywhere on the floor except for three-point range. He doesn't take many either. I think he's averaging like two a game, and he still scores like a madman. He's averaging, what, almost 30 points a game right now? Something I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, no, that was a good one that I had too. The only thing I'll say about him, man, he has been surrounded with really,
really
terrible
bad players.
It's really bad.
But notice since Drew Holiday came back, the team looks like a completely different team. They demolished the Hawks last night. I don't know if you got to watch any of that game.
Yes, I did. That was impressive.
And he was out. He only played for 9 minutes, I think.
No, Drew definitely adds a lot. And yeah, you have somebody, if they get consistent, just like, unfortunately, with that team, and look, Anthony Davis hasn't been healthy either. I don't think he's played 70 games at any point in his career yet. I think his average is 65 games played a year.
Yeah, I'm well aware. He keeps killing my fantasy team.
Right. So so he there's no question he has the skill. There's no question that he would benefit off it. I look at that team and I'm like, nobody would leave him enough space, because even if he's at the three-point line, I'll double you. Who are you getting? Who's beating me?
Right.
And that's been their problem. And that's why it's really sad to watch. And Anthony Davis is locked in, so he's not going anywhere anytime soon.
There was several podcasts that came out in a row about what superstar do you feel is trapped on their team? And he was obviously way up on the list of everybody's.
Right.
They're like, oh, poor Anthony Davis. Well, you know what? He's still young. They still got time. I mean, I think he's 23. They still can put some guys around him. It'll be fine. I have one more for you.
Spoken like a true Sixers fan.
Totally. I have one more for you. This one popped out. I was like, you know, if we could add a three-point shot to one guy and his ability to stretch the court would make such a difference. It's got to be Stephen Adams, right? If that dude could shoot a three, he would take so much pressure off of Westbrook. They would be winning more than they are right now.
And given how little three-point shooting that team has, that would definitely be huge.
It would be gigantic. That boy would
open up. That actually brings up like an interesting thing where if you run like a pick and pop for Stephen Adams, now you open up the lane and driving lane for Russell Westbrook. Yep. And if you clog the lane, well, then he'll just kick it out to Stephen Adams. Oh man, that would be really fun.
It would be so much fun, right? Man, Stephen Adams would be like surefire all-star. Like,
oh yeah.
He's already got so much athletic ability. His defense is really good. He's great around the rim, and he can shoot a little bit. But if you could add a three-point shot to his game, it would be ridiculous. He would easily be one of my favorite players in the league.
Completely agree.
Yeah. Are you your whole work environment is kind of distracting me. Are you in a dressing room?
No. Sorry, I work in like a garments place, so stuff flying around.
Hence the garments behind you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get you fired here, am I?
No.
All right, cool. Good. So this is take a friend to work day, I guess, huh?
Yes.
Cool. Anyway, speaking of big man, you want to talk about one big man who's actually had a personal resurgence this year? And I think he's like one of, I'm not sure about yours, but he's definitely one of my least favorite players in the league. Dwight Howard.
I'm a Lakers fan. I despise Dwight Howard. Yep. It you know, the thing is he has said when he left Orlando that he's going to get a fresh start in LA. When he left LA, he said, I'm going to get a fresh start in Houston. And when he left Houston, he said he was going to get a fresh start in Atlanta. One thing that's undeniable and it's painful to say is that when he's engaged and when he's bought in, he is a really, really, really good player. And he probably, you know, deserved more MVP consideration for his work in Orlando. And he's really playing well in Atlanta.
Yeah, I was watching him a bit last night, and you know, I think he's 31 now, which I think everyone feels like he's an old 31 because he came in so young. It seems like he's been in the league for years and years, because I guess he has. But he's still really dynamic. I mean, the guy can still leap out of the building. He put down an alley-oop last night that I just did not see coming. I was like, oh my God, he can still do that. He can still defend, and he can still block shots. You know, right. He still has very limited offensive game, but man, he's still a super athletic talent, and he's really good on the defensive end. But I was thinking this too, just like basically how you just mentioned, he went for a fresh start in LA. He went for a fresh start in Houston, and both of those places, well, not LA. LA was kind of doomed from the start, but in Houston, the first year he was fine. Everything was working out great. They were winning and he was happy. Right. And I couldn't stop thinking last night that like, oh, Dwight Howard, everybody loves him right now. He's, you know, because they're winning. Next season, if they have the same team and they're not winning, it's going to be the same thing all over again. And this is
who he is.
It becomes a distraction. It becomes a detriment to his team. His plus side on the defensive end on the court gets taken immediately away by his distraction to the team, by his griping and his not being happy because he's not winning. He just wants to win, but he doesn't know how to go about doing it the right way. And that's why I don't like him. I mean, not personally, I don't know.
It's on him to get out of, you know, this shack Charles Barkley criticism of him not posting up enough, not demanding the ball enough. And I do think, you know, he buys into that stuff, because if he just decided, you know, this was a quote that was bandied about when Kobe Bryant and Dwight Howard met after the season to say, hey, you know, Kobe was trying to say, hey, you should stay long term. And what he told Dwight Howard was, hey, you be like Tyson Chandler. And Dwight Howard was very offended by that. But the truth is if Dwight Howard, which is a lot of what he's doing in Atlanta, plays like Tyson Chandler, he can be much better than Tyson Chandler. That's a very good basketball player.
Oh, yeah.
The thing is, he has this thing in his head, like, I want to be a traditional big man. I want to be like Shaq. And I want to post up. And I want to be dominant in the post. And I am dominant in the post. The problem is he's not honest with himself. And it's not that he's not good in the post. It's that the post game isn't as important anymore, and he needs to adjust that.
Right.
And I think he temporarily buys in, especially like, you know, the fresh start thing. It's on him to say at this stage in his career, hey, things are going well. Let's just keep this going. And it's this inner thing that's kind of bubbles up sometimes that gets him into trouble.
For sure. I mean, listen, we all get unhappy at our jobs at some point in our lives. I mean, I'm constantly miserable at mine, you know? I shouldn't say that too loud. What's that?
I'm doing a podcast at mine.
Yeah, you have the best job. I want your job. My job is way more stress. there's no way I could ever do a podcast at my job. But that's cool. Good for you, buddy. Good for you. Things to be thankful for. Anyway, so I can understand, like, you know, I can understand his dissatisfaction with his teams when he feels like he's the best player on the floor and things just are not happening and he's not winning. I get that. But at some point, you need to take ownership of what you're doing and your actions and how you're handling yourself on the court and how you can make teammates better. And that's just the part that he never exceeds at. You know, he never excels at. He never really understands that, like, you have to look in you first. And then that's the best way to make other people around you better.
I think Atlanta's done some smart stuff. Like they made it, you know, they made him feel like, oh, you're the star on the team, and he's announced last and things like that. And it's, you know, those things sound silly, but for a guy like Dwight who kind of needs that ego massage, I think they've really handled it well. And I think after Stan Van Gundy, Coach Bud is probably the coach with the most stature that he's been coached by. And I think that helps. That helps a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Also, you know, I think the system that Bud runs is very friendly for Dwight. Like, they pass the ball around, they move it around a lot, and they put him in good positions to get the ball and dunk, you know?
Right.
And he's, you know, we were talking, I was emailing you this a little bit, and there's been a lot of talk about how, I guess, last year the Hawks were a terrible rebounding team. And this year they're one of the best. And I think, you know, that's in no small part due to Dwight Howard. He doesn't get enough credit for the rebounding that he does. He's just a ball magnet, man. If it's up in the air, he's going to find it. He just still has that kind of athletic explosion, and he knows how to use his body in a way to get that ball. So he does really well for them there. He works really, and I didn't think the system, I thought he was going to like muck it up and slow it down in the middle. They wouldn't be able to use him, but they're just like zinging it around, finding him where they need to, and he keeps everybody in, you know, his ability to get the ball when it's rebounded and play defense, I think, is just working. It's working well for everyone.
Completely agree. I think me and you were skeptical long term, but this season right now things are looking really good, and they really have done a good job.
Yeah, totally. And you know, I don't want to root against anyone, so I'm rooting for him, and I'm rooting for the Hawks, even though they're like one of my least favorite teams to watch. But you know, it's cool. Good for them. Let's keep it rolling here. We were talking a little bit about Boston. Speaking of big men, Al Horford. So you take him off. Right. You take him off the Hawks, where they had a really terrible rebounding rate, and you put him on Boston, and now they're terrible rebounders. I don't think that's a coincidence. Your thoughts?
No. Yeah. I love Al Horford as a player, and I still do. I still am very bullish about the signing, just because any player with that kind of versatility will be, you know, fully utilized by Brad Stevens. And he was in Atlanta too. Coach Bud's a great coach, and Brad Stevens is a great coach. But rebounding is definitely, has always been one of his weaknesses. It's always been one of the reasons why people have kind of not considered him a traditional center, even though he's played that in his entire career now.
Entire career, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't, it's not,
I think he's also a little bit undersized for the position too, and so that doesn't help.
Right. No, it's always been one of his kind of short weaknesses.
Right. And it's weird because, like, when he wasn't on the court, they went through this horrible losing streak. I think they lost like 4 in a row or something.
Right.
And when he's back, I mean, he brings so much energy and so much just knowledge of the game and being able to hit shots, really important key shots, and playing really solid defense, that it makes you wonder, like, is this team really as good as we thought they were? I know they have a ton of wings, but what else do they have? In the preseason, everyone was like, Boston's going to win with Horford in there. They're going to win like 60 games and like second seed in the East. And, you know, I'm not seeing it right now. If you take him out for 4 games or however many games he was out and they had that kind of losing streak, I'm a little bit worried for the Celtics' near-term future.
Near-term and long-term, I'll tell you what, if you step back and look at the assets they've amassed and you look at their drafts, which I don't think have been very successful.
They've been terrible. Just say
right.
it.
Right. Yeah.
I hate the Celtics, so you can say it. It's fine.
I'm very, very mean to them on Twitter. I will try to soften my stance there. But you look at kind of the team they have now. They don't have one true star. I think between Al Horford and Jay Crowder, you know, they have like a really good two and second and third best player that can be on a very good team.
Right.
I don't buy Isaiah Thomas as that guy. And a coach like Brad Stevens masks a lot of shortcomings. And as an organization, you have to be honest. You can't look at your win total or you can't look at your performances, because why do they struggle in the playoffs? Because when push comes to shove and you're playing against a good team in the playoffs, they will take away all your gimmicks, all your bells and whistles to make your team look good. And it comes down to star power and the ability to, you know, be a game changer. And Boston doesn't really have that. And as long as Brad Stevens is the coach, they're always going to be competent, you know, 45 to 50 wins team, right, regardless of kind of the level of talent. Because, you know, Jay Crowder is a really good player. He was the best player, in my opinion, last season. And this season, he probably is too. And Al Horford, you know, it's they're neck and neck. But you start taking away, you know, the bells and whistles and all that, like I'm saying, it's I wonder about what the trajectory of this team is. And given all their assets, given all their draft picks, given, you know, everything they have, for them to top out as a maybe second round or fringe third round contender is disappointing. It should be disappointing for Celtics fans.
For sure. And, you know, on a personal note, I'm just going to say that to all the Celtics fans, and don't take offense to the Celtics, but neener, neener, neener.
I'm so excited that this thing is going to fall apart.
Yeah. No, because listen, as a Sixers fan, for the last 3 years, I've heard people in Boston being like, oh, what are they doing? They're not building like the Celtics. Or the Celtics are just a mess. And like Danny Ainge did the exact same thing that Sam Hinkie did. And everybody's like, oh, but they're so far ahead and Danny Ainge would never do what Hinkie did. Like, shut the F up. You know what? He did the exact same thing and didn't luck out, didn't go all the way. And look what he's got. He's got a ton of draft picks that he can't give away. And who did you get in the draft this year? Your third overall pick was, I mean, he's... Right. Yeah, what is the kid's name? I forget. Oh my God.
Jaylen Brown.
Jaylen Brown. He's nice, right, but he's not a superstar. Let's not fool ourselves. Right. You know,
exactly. No,
Horford and Crowder, if those are your best players, you're not a good team. You're not going to go very far in the playoffs. And like you're a solid team, and it totally speaks to Stevens being a phenomenal coach that he's getting so much out of these guys. And honestly, I sort of think that the loss of Evan Turner hurt them a little bit too. It hurt Evan Turner for sure.
Yeah. You know, and this again goes to Brad Stevens. If you're a very unique kind of player that needs a very unique set of circumstances to thrive, Brad Stevens will find it and mold it.
Exactly.
But he and Turner step out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He and Evan Turner were perfect for each other.
Right. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because, like, I know this because I saw Evan Turner play in Philly for 4 years. Like, he's a very specific type of player. He needs a very specific role. And he needs a coach who believes in what he does and enables him to do it.
Right.
When you're putting him in a position where you're, like, you pay him 4 years, $72 million or whatever he got, and you're expecting him to, like, sort of be the second team hero, that's not his game. He can't put a team on his back. He just can't. He's more of a facilitator and sort of an all-around Swiss Army knife. But what they got, I think his head's not there yet. And, you know, it's sad because, I mean, I don't particularly like Evan Turner, the ball player, but I think he's a fine guy.
Right.
Anyway.
And look, that contract didn't look good from the moment it was signed. Some contracts you look at and you're like, oh, okay, you know, maybe this could work, maybe it couldn't. That just didn't look good. And I always worry about teams that play the, well, we're just accumulating assets card. When you're doing that, when you're playing games with your salary cap and you get stuck, that's pretty devastating.
Yeah, and they did. Portland did exactly that. They're on this losing streak right now, and they have the exact same team they had last year, plus Evan Turner, and they've signed these guys for nearly max contracts. I mean, they're going to be running this back for years. Unless they somehow make a swing and make a trade for a big man that they desperately need, I don't know how they're going to do it. And I think they're probably the only team in the NBA right now that actually needs a big man.
I know.
Oddly enough. But, you know, speaking of crazy contracts, let's talk about your team. Mozgov, who we all thought was going to be a crazy contract. That kid is looking – I mean, I call him a kid because – he's old for the NBA, but he's still very young to me. But that dude is looking really good, man. He's looking like the old Mozgov, and it looks like that might be a great contract.
I was, you know, I love admitting when I'm wrong. I was so wrong about that because I was accepting of the Luol Deng contract, which actually, conversely, is looking pretty bad, but I was truly devastated when they committed that much money to Mozgov because I didn't understand it. I, you know, like all of us, I'm looking at the last season of Mozgov, not his peak, and thinking, listen, I don't know what we're going to do with this guy. I don't know how much he can play. And he has really solidified the Lakers starting unit. He has really solidified their defense. They're not great defense because they're never going to be a great defense. They basically have no defensive-minded players.
Right. If Swaggy P is your best defender right now, you're in right. defensive trouble.
Right. So, but Mozgov has provided that stabilizing force, and you know, he seems, just based on all accounts, just seems like a great guy to have in the locker room. His work ethic is just phenomenal. It's a good role model for the rest of the team. But he has been such a stabilizing force, and more importantly, where I didn't kind of realize this, his ability to just be big at the rim mm-hmm. is so huge for a young team with young, you know, guards that just have to have, if you have the ability to just dump it off to a big guy who's open under the basket, or have a role man who can actually catch the ball.
Essentially a safety valve. Yeah.
That is huge. And that has really helped the offense kind of when it gets stuck in the muck a little bit. They know they can, you know, run a pick and roll with Mozgov and kind of play off that, or throw an alley-oop or something to kind of get the team out of the mud.
Right. And, you know, alley-oops, that's a really good example. I totally forgot, because the last time you were on the podcast, we did talk about a Lakers preview, and we both thought that the Mozgov signing was going to be a horrible albatross around their neck for years to come.
Oh.
I totally forgot that guy was really athletic in his day, and he's still there. He's like, he looks like he's back. He caught an alley-oop the other night that I was like, where did that come from? Like, what? Yeah, and he can, step out. Yeah, he's running the floor. I forgot that he can step out and hit shots too, like 12, 15 feet. He's a huge asset for them. And yeah, in a team full of minus defenders, he's been really big for them. Let's talk a little bit more about your Lakers. So I want to bring up that, like, last time we talked, I said that they would probably win 27 games in the season. And boy, do I look foolish. They look really good. And I, you know, no offense, buddy, I hate the Lakers. Historically, as a franchise. But I really like watching this team. I cannot stop watching them. They're a lot of fun.
I can't remember the last time I enjoyed, like, true joy watching a team. Because when your team is a contender, there's a joy certainly to watch a team win, but there's also a little bit of a pressure where you feel like, oh my goodness, you know, if we don't win this, if we don't win that, we're just all sitting back and just enjoying this team, having fun, because we have no real expectations. We're watching, they're playing a really fun style. They're all engaged. They're all into it. There's not like a heavy volume, you know, single player, like last night, Russell Westbrook. It's just all Russell all the time, and that's fine. Right. But there's something beautiful about the egalitarian way. You know, if you look at the minutes played for the Lakers, I don't think anybody's averaging over 30 minutes, not one player.
Really?
And it's just this group effort. The bench is playing awesome. There's no lineup that the Lakers put out that is just completely, you know, just terrible. And it has been a complete revelation just how different this team looks. And obviously, you know, the coach, Luke Walton, is such an upgrade over Byron Scott. And what's so encouraging for the franchise, Luke Walton is 36 years old.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was going to mention Luke Walton as opposed to Byron Scott.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, how could you not? It's like night and day. It's incredible. I mean, he really is a player's coach. He's got those guys working together. He's been able to mend the relationship between D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young, which is something that, like, last year everyone was thinking that D'Angelo Russell was going to get traded because it went so bad so quickly.
I mean, Nick Young is a perfect example of just how much of a difference it is year over year, because I was a complete advocate of just waiving Nick Young. I wanted him off the roster. I didn't want him in the locker room. I didn't want anything.
He was so close to being in the D League.
Right.
He was working his way out of the league. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's one of the positive forces in the locker room. Who would have thought that, you know, Nick Young would be a good locker room guy? And he has been, you know, by all accounts, he's him and, you know, when things are going bad, you question everything your front office does.
Right.
When there was a big hubbub on, you know, with the Lakers community when, you know, they decided to cut Anthony Brown, who's a young player who actually just signed with the Pelicans, and to keep Meta World Peace. And we were like, why are you keeping Meta World Peace? Mm-hmm. But when you have a really good coach, and our general manager, Mitch Kupchak, even though, you know, he's been much maligned because of just the way the perception is not his actual job, but the perception of his job was, when you have good people in charge, you start giving them the benefit of the doubt. I did not give any benefit of the doubt to the Mozgov contract. I did not give any benefit of the doubt to the fact that they kept Meta World Peace. But guess what? They are building a culture. And part of building a culture is making decisions that are culture-based, not only basketball-based. You know, keeping Meta World Peace over Anthony Brown is not a basketball decision. It's a culture decision. And they've been proven right so far.
Sure. We can speak about culture, but that's a whole different podcast.
Yeah, I know.
But
yeah.
I would say that, like, because I'm hot and cold about the whole culture argument. I think winning creates a winning culture and losing creates the same thing, you know? But I will say that, like, it is great to have stabilizing presence and mature older statesmen on your team, like Meta World Peace. He's been around. He knows what's going on. He knows the score. And it's great to have him around your young guys, especially for a guy that, you know, was famous for the malice in the palace. It's good to have him around because he can tell them what not to do, you know?
Yeah. Hey, listen, it's all lessons.
And that guy also has done a lot of work on himself. Like, he's very vocal about having gone to therapy and, like, tried to become a better person. So I think bringing him in just as that mentor, I think is huge. I think he's great. And, I would love to have him on my team just as a guy sitting on the bench.
Right.
Well, not on this team right now. There's just no room for him. But, like, in general, as a theory, right? But yeah, so like, what are your thoughts about? So they've started out pretty hot, much better than even either of us ever thought.
Right.
And what do you think going from here? What do you think the record is going to? I mean, not what the record is going to be, but what do you expect for? So last night they had OKC and they beat them, and it came down. You know, it was a close game. I couldn't stay awake for the whole thing. I'm sure you did.
Yes.
But they won that game, and now they have a home-and-home against the Warriors. So I think this is going to be a little bit difficult. I think they might be back to 500 after the week's end. But
oh, yeah. No, you mentioned you picked them for 27 wins. I also picked them for 27 wins this season. That clearly, you know, it's going to be more than that. They're in probably the worst stretch of their schedule right now. There was, like, this 12-game stretch that started last with the game against the Spurs that they were very competitive in. It's this 12-game stretch where, honestly, if the Lakers go 4-8, it'll be a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of stretch where they find themselves in. What's important now is how they deal with the adversity, because I think the losses are going to pile up a little bit.
Right.
Maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 losses in a row. I want to see how the team responds, if they still keep that togetherness, if they still trust their, you know, system, and they keep doing what they're doing. But one thing I'm very encouraged by is they really are not intimidated by anybody. They're not backing down from anybody. They go out with the expectation that they should win.
Right.
And, you know, more often than not, that's not going to be the case. But the fact that they come out with that belief, and even, you know, against, like, the Spurs, they could have lost that game by 20 points, but they made it, you know, really tight at the end because they have that belief and they keep coming back and they keep coming back. And, you know, the team is having a great season. Individually, there's a lot of players that still have a lot of room to grow. Now, D'Angelo Russell is not going to be playing in this back-to-back because he's having a problem with a sore knee. But you look at somebody like Brandon Ingram, who's off the bench, who is showing promise, especially on the defensive end, which people didn't expect. If his minutes grow and he gets more comfortable, if D'Angelo Russell gets more comfortable, Julius Randle has been amazing. If he gets more comfortable, this team will continue to get better this season itself. And I'll tell you this, I've been very cautious about my projection for this team. And this is a little bit surprising, but I think that we can at least entertain the discussion of a fringe 8 or 9 seed finish for the Lakers, only because their schedule has not been particularly easy. It's probably middle of the pack. But they legitimately beat that OKC team last night. And OKC is a team that's also considered to be probably like an 8 seed, kind of 7 seed kind of team. And if they want to be considered amongst them, they have to win those games at home. And they've been doing that. They took king care of business. They beat Atlanta on the road. They beat the Warriors at home. These are some real wins that they've piled up. And if they get, you know, if they continue their trajectory and they continue what they're doing, I'm not saying it's likely. I still think they're probably going to finish somewhere around like 36 to 40 wins. Mm-hmm. But my God, what an accomplishment from finishing with, I think, 17 or 19.
Yeah,
17 wins the year before. To double that up is just, it's almost unheard of.
It's incredible. And, you know, this is going to be the first real test for Luke Walton, right? They're going on a road trip, and they're going to have a lot of really talented, tough teams to beat. If he can keep them together, that's going to be huge. It's going to be a huge testament to him as a coach and to them as a team. You know, again, they're very young. Being able to keep them together in a way that they would, you know, rally around each other rather than fold, which is, I think, exactly what they would have done last year, which they did the whole year.
Completely agree.
Yeah, I think it's going to be huge for them. And I think this is going to be a huge learning experience. I'm still rooting for them to maybe finish with like 30 wins so that Sixers can get that pick and it's still going to be a good one.
When we came into the season, I was expecting them to be a bottom three team only because I thought that all the teams at the bottom, including the Sixers, we're all going to, you know, the teams were going to be better, like 5, 6, 7 wins better.
Right.
And just virtue of that, even if the Lakers finish with 27 to 28 wins, would still be a bottom three record or close to it. But yeah, I think, you know, that pick is gone. Like, that's as good as gone.
It's gone. It's gone. Thank you for that pick.
Congratulations.
I think that's the best return on Michael Carter Williams anyone could have hoped for.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And everyone at the time was like, what is Hinkie doing? All right, let me get started here. this is a whole different podcast again.
Trust the process.
Yeah, trust the process. Joel Embiid is now the process. Have you heard about this? Joel Embiid is now the process?
I love it. He's embraced it. It probably drives Colangelo nuts, but...
Yeah, you know what? The team's embracing it, too. They're actually letting him be announced as the process now, and they're rolling with it, which is very smart for them. You know, I know they wanted to distance themselves from the whole hinky thing and get away from it, but, like, they have to do this. If they don't acknowledge this, it's going to be so bad for them.
But, anyway,
we were talking about the Lakers. I got to work my Sixers in when I can, you know?
Hey, don't blame you. Our teams are looking good, like looking at least our future.
Yeah, hopefully. I can't wait till Ben Simmons comes back. It's going to just be so much fun to watch. But yeah, fun teams to watch, man. The Lakers have definitely been up there for me. I'm looking forward to seeing how they're going to end up. And I do think, actually, that they could possibly sneak into that 8th seed because a lot of the teams that I was expecting to be good, like Dallas, are not going to be there. Dallas has fallen off a cliff. And Utah is not doing so well right now. They have no point guard. They're not able to score. They're still great defensively, but they have nothing going offensively. So I really think that the playoffs, sad as it is, I mean, as much as I don't want it to happen, I mean, for the Lakers, I think it would be great. I think for that young franchise and to give them some confidence going forward, and they have a really exciting young nucleus, a young core that can grow together. I think that experience would probably be awesome for them. But for my own, you know, sake, I want them to finish around 30 wins and maybe have like the 6th overall pick. That would be fantastic for me.
It's a really good draft.
Yeah. I haven't even started getting into it. I haven't looked at any draft stuff. I'm so busy like trying to wrap my head around like I'm into the NBA this year, you know, trying to get stuff done on podcasts. So I'm really honing into this. So I'm not even worried about the draft yet. It's so far down the road. I can barely get one of these done a week. It's insane. But anyway, buddy, I should let you get back to work probably, right?
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, but I've been really, for all the talk about how the Warriors are ruining the NBA, this season has been really fun. Every night there's a good game to watch and the league is in a great place.
Such a great place. I'm so happy for it right now, especially since the NFL is like nosediving and I'm not really that upset about that either.
No.
Again, a whole other podcast.
Oh yes.
So, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? Any plans?
Oh man, a lot of food. I'm going to Universal Studios in the morning. We've had this planned, and it's just trying to get the family together and all our schedules lined up. We finally had opportunities, so Universal Studios in the morning, and then a lot of food after that.
Nice. Oh, that sounds like a great day. I'm just hanging out at home in Brooklyn with the wife because we went to see her family earlier in the week this weekend. Nice. So yeah, because I've had off since I've had off most of the week, and still I can't seem to get anything done. I've had to push this podcast back like 3 days.
I feel like when we're not like working that much, that's also when when you have time is when you get lazy.
Yeah, well, it's not even a matter of getting lazy. It's a matter of like, it's the holidays, so of course there's a ton of stuff to do. Even like having to cook Thanksgiving dinner for ourselves, it's a whole to do.
Oh, I'm going to be doing a lot of Black Friday research as well to find tech deals. I post a lot on Twitter, so if you're interested in tech deals, follow me.
I did see that too, yeah. The tech stuff is nice. I'm not that tech savvy myself, but I can tell you
you're doing all right.
Yeah. I finally figured out Twitter, so that's good. Or getting there. Anyway, Simon, thank you again. Why don't you plug your stuff real quick one more time?
Yeah, just follow me at Twitter, at @DAMANR, Damanr. I will post all my stuff there all the time. I appreciate you, Joe. I hope you guys have a Thanksgiving, and I hope everybody listening has a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks, buddy. I'm thankful for you coming on, and I'm sure I'll talk to you again soon.
You got it.
Now get back to work, young man.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah,
got it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there you go. Thanks again, Damen, for coming on and gracing the show with your presence. It's always great to have you on, and look forward to the next time. In the meantime, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I'll talk to you real soon. Bye-bye.